getting the doctors to understand that we have bleeding problems too. Like when I was growing up, I knew I was carrier, but it was like, you know,
that's it.
Right. You're just a carrier.
Just a carrier. That phrase.
You know.
Yeah.
And and then it was a symptomatic carrier, and so it was really hard to switch over to say, I have mild hemophilia.
Yeah.
Because I told somebody else one time, I'm like, you know, you wouldn't say, like, if a man had a cold and he's diagnosed with a cold, he has a cold. If I have the same symptoms, I'm not a symptomatic cold carrier.
Right. No, exactly.
I have a cold too.
Hello and welcome back to Empowering Women, a podcast series about the Empowering Women with Bleeding and Clotting Disorders annual retreat outside Houston, Texas.
I am strong.
I am bold.
I am vibrant.
I am courageous.
I am confident.
I am awesome.
I am divine.
I am lovable.
I'm your host, Heather Robb, and in our last episode, we traced the history of this great event and talked about how the simple act of uniting women can have powerful consequences. In this episode, we're going to focus on another important element of this event, believing women. This retreat is a safe space for attendees, a place where no one is going to question or doubt their experience. They can share openly and be believed. Sadly, this is the exception, not the rule for many women, even outside the bleeding and clotting disorders community. When it comes to our interactions with medical professionals, women the world over spend a lot of time not being believed. In recent years, multiple studies of our healthcare system have revealed a systemic bias away from believing women, particularly in the areas of heart health and pain assessment. Women's accounts of their own experiences are frequently underestimated or dismissed altogether. This basic fact is even more extreme within the bleeding and clotting disorders community, where for many years it was thought that women couldn't actually have those disorders, they were just carriers of the gene. Well, believe it or not, there are places where that is actually still the prevailing wisdom. Needless to say, we heard stories from almost every participant about experiences where they weren't believed by medical professionals. We selected a handful to share. The format of this episode will be slightly different than episode one, more like long-form storytelling with the occasional interjection from me. The first woman we'll hear from literally had to fight for her life to be believed in a post-op scenario at a hospital in Texas. Rachel found out 5 years ago she had mild hemophilia, and since then has had 2 emergency surgeries from bleeding. Here's Rachel.
I didn't come to the hospital prepared, like with factor on hand. I had like one dose with me. And so we infused when we heard about them going to send me back for surgery. And I said, well, I'm going to need factor after surgery. And they were like, oh yeah, we'll get it from the pharmacy. And I'm like, but you're not a trauma hospital. You don't have factor. And they're like, oh yeah, yeah, we'll just get it from the pharmacy. I said, no, you don't carry it. Well, of course, I don't have a PhD and I don't work there. So they didn't take my word for it. So they went to go talk to the pharmacy and all that. And they were like, well, we can get it transferred from the trauma hospital, and so you won't go without. I had surgery at like 2 in the morning, got to my room, I think at 5 in the morning or something. At 7 in the morning, a hematologist came in, and, you know, I guess that worked around there. She was more an oncologist. The nurse came in, and she had it already mixed in a saline bag, and I asked which factor product it was. And she goes, oh, I don't know, you know, because she's just doing what the doctor ordered and then what the pharmacy gave her. And I looked at it and it said Humate P, and Humate P does have factor 8 in it, but it has way too much von Willebrand's.
What Rachel is referring to here, of course, is von Willebrand factor, which is included in Humate P. But Rachel has hemophilia, not VWD, so giving her large amounts of VWD factor could be very dangerous.
I said, no, I can't have that. I have hemophilia. I don't have von Willebrand's. And they go, well, this is what they said to give you. I said, well, I can't have that. So my husband is trying to get a hold of the hematologist that had come in that morning and that had prescribed that. And as he's on the phone, the pharmacist comes in and she said, you know, here's the boxes. And she had 3 boxes in hand. And she said, we're trying to get you to 3,000 units of factor 8. Well, when I did the math, it was roughly like 2,400 units of factor 8 versus like almost 5,000 units of von Willebrand's. And I said, no, I don't have von Willebrand's disease. I have hemophilia. And she put her hand in my face and she said, no, you don't understand. We're adding this number. And she pointed to the factor 8 She said, we're not adding this number. And she pointed to the Von Willebrands. And I said, no, you don't understand. It is one product. You can't separate them. One product. And she was like mad at me and getting like aggressive. And she was like, well, this is our protocol. This is what we give all of our hemophilia patients. And in my head, I'm thinking, okay, you're not a trauma hospital. And hemophilia is rare, so really, how many hemophilia patients have you treated? And I said, well, this is the wrong protocol, you know, like, yeah. I can't have this. She goes, well, we've already mixed it. And I said, well, I'm not taking it.
How many of us have been here? A nurse or doctor entrenched in their ways, not listening, not working with you to solve a problem. With rare conditions like bleeding and clotting disorders, the stakes are just too high to let yourself be steamrolled. But often, we lack the confidence to push back. Luckily, Rachel had some support from her HTC.
I had talked to my HTC and they said, do not take that. When my HTC said, no, do not take it, I felt like I had, you know, like more oomph to fight it. Like, no, I am not taking it. And so when my husband was talking to the hematologist at the same time on the phone, he was explaining to her that I have hemophilia. I don't have Von Willebrand's. And I'm like, well, thank God. Like, we did know what was going on, because if we didn't and we just said, okay, well, this is what they said to take. Yeah. So I'm going to take it. I could have had blood clot, stroke, kidney failure, death. And so it's a little scary because they're like, nope, you're fine. Oh, and when were you diagnosed? When you were 30? Well, you went 30 years, so you'll be fine, you know. And then people don't take women as seriously as men.
Thank you for sharing your story, Rachel. So glad you were able to advocate for yourself in that difficult moment. As Rachel said, hemophilia is rare, but not as rare as some other diagnoses that were represented at this retreat. Next, we'll hear from Karen, who has an extremely rare platelet disorder. I'll let her tell you more about it. She's currently fighting to get her new insurance company to believe her about the treatment she needs. Her life depends on it.
My diagnosis is Glanzmann's thrombocythemia. Basically, what it is my platelets, I have enough of them, but they don't work. I've been coming to the camp. This is my fourth time coming. Probably for over 10 years I've been coming to the camp off and on. With Glanzmann's, a lot of people don't realize we're literally one in a million. We know of probably 300 to 400 in the whole world, and 150. Between 150 and 200 are in the U.S. The children are being diagnosed more, which is fantastic. I am one of the oldest in the U.S. with it, and one of the oldest in the world. I know of one other person who lives in Scotland, and she's 72 years old. My biggest problem is I just switched insurance companies because I had to, and now they're telling me the three medications that literally keep me alive, I may not be able to get any of them. And that's a scary thought. I had a GI bleed almost 2 years ago that my factor, the pharmacy bill was $4 million for roughly 12 days in the hospital with the GI bleed. But without that factor, I would have died.
You heard that right. $4 million for 12 days in the hospital. We could spend an entire podcast series just breaking down exorbitant treatment costs around the country, but we'll save that for another time. For now, it's important to just consider for a second whether or not that enormous treatment cost weighs into how doctors, nurses, and insurers treat or don't treat their patients.
So without that factor, literally I would have died. So now when I'm having the insurance company tell me, they said it's on the formulary, but it's not, and it's very concerning to me right now. Very stressful. I'm known at the hospital I go to say, you're going to kill me, get out of my room. And generally then the hospitalist will say, wait a minute, what? Yeah. And I don't mind discussing why I feel the way I do. But if they don't come back to, or if they get defensive, it's like, this is my life, not yours.
As with all rare conditions, often things boil down to a lack of understanding. And as we heard with Rachel, that lack of understanding can lead to life-threatening circumstances where patients are forced to stand up to the very doctors that are treating them. Karen has dealt with that a lot. She is the warmest, kindest person you could ever meet. But when it comes to advocating for herself, she is not afraid to fight.
And I've had two doctors tell me that I've made them better doctors. And they've learned to listen to their chronic patients. But I won't hold my tongue again. You have to advocate for yourself no matter if you have a bleeding disorder, a cancer, diabetes, or a normal person who just doesn't feel right and knows that they don't feel right, but they can't get a doctor to listen to them. You know, it all comes down to knowing your body.
Karen has endured many challenges in addition to Glansman's, including a recent cancer diagnosis and losing the ability to work. But she has found a new passion in recent years, believing other people with Glansman's and helping them get the care they need.
I'm helping the parents with young children advocate for their children on the right type of medication to give for my disorder. So that's kind of become my passion, with having the GI, the cancer and then the GI bleeds. Mentally, it was a very rough time. So this has sort of made me want to get out of bed every day. I'm hoping through this may spark somebody to say, wait a minute, let's see what else we could do for, you know, people with Glansman's. I'm not supposed to be here. I figure God's got a reason for me to still be here. And I think that this is part of it. Telling my story. Because most everybody concentrates on the von Willebrands, the hemophilia, and they don't see the platelet disorders. I have to do this. You know, if one person hears my story and the story about parents, children not being able to get their medication the way it's supposed to be given, if it inspires them to help, then all my whole life was worth this.
Thank you for sharing your story, Karen. It's beautiful you've committed your life to sharing what you've learned with others. The experience of not being believed can take a huge emotional toll. So the last clip we'll share is from a workshop led by Ed Kubler, the social worker who started this retreat 20 years ago. We met him in episode 1. This workshop was called The Emotional Toll of Life. The first woman we'll hear from worked as a teacher until she got attacked by a student. The attack did severe damage to her neck, necessitating surgery. When she woke up after surgery, she was unable to breathe and had pain like a knife going through her chest. Medical staff assured her that she was just experiencing an anxiety attack or severe reflux and sent her home. Well, 3 weeks later, she found out she had a saddle embolism. It's a miracle she didn't die. In this clip, she talks about how she has navigated some mental health challenges in the years since, working to recover from both the initial attack and the trauma of not being believed about the pain she experienced after her surgery.
So they set me up with a doctor for depression, one for PTSD. I didn't know I needed all that because I always was a strong person and I thought I would pull out of it. And, you know, 3 years passed by, I didn't pull out of it. It's very important to get mental health. It is very important. And don't think that it'll just go away. It doesn't. I mean, I and doing things like this, this is part of my therapy. I talked to my PTS therapist, and I had to go see her before coming because of the anxiety that I was having of having to relive or talk about it. But this gives me strength also. And last week, I went to see a doctor in Boston for a second opinion. I did that on my own. And that was part of my therapy also, that I had control. I was dismissed in the hospital. I was dismissed by two hospitals who told me nothing was wrong with me other than anxiety and reflux, which were incorrect. And I nearly died because of that. So you learn not to trust your doctors also. You question everything. You feel something, you go, oh my gosh, you know, what's going to happen? I'm terrified of my future because as I'm getting older, I know other things are going to happen. Talking about whether or not to get off of my blood thinners or not, being that my clots were so massive, what do you do? So I live with anxiety constantly, and I wouldn't be able to do it without therapy, and I didn't even know I needed it.
I want to point out that therapy for both depression and PTSD were recommended by doctors. When living with a rare and difficult disease, we can often point to instances of doctors and nurses failing us, but we should make sure to highlight those times where doctors and nurses guided us toward healing too. Anna makes such an important point here at the end when she says, I didn't even know I needed it. For those struggling with mental health challenges, the hardest part can be identifying or admitting that you need help, especially if you've spent your entire life powering through pain, not being listened to, and just finding ways to be self-sufficient. So thank you, Anna, for sharing this and for encouraging us all to think about mental health and to reach out for help when we need it. At the end of the workshop, Ed asked the women to share some of their coping mechanisms or some pearls of wisdom for others going through a difficult time. Here's what a few of them had to say.
It'll get better. It might take some time. I think the other thing is I had to take one day at a time. Keep going. You know, if one person doesn't listen to you, like that particular doctor didn't, maybe going to see another person with a fresh set of eyes who will listen to you will help. But just sometimes, some days, you just, all you could do is just one day at a time, and just keep going forward.
I have it, and I do MMA. It's okay. You'll survive. Take your frustrations out, because you don't want to take them out at your doctor's office and your doctor go, oh, I'm not listening to you because you're going off on me. Take out your frustrations first before you get there. Scream, cry, whatever you have to do. Overcome that little speed bump in the road. There's four hemophiliacs in the family. We've already lost one. He was part of the 10,000. Don't be a part. Be yourself. Advocate for yourself. Stand strong. Stand firm. Don't take no for the answer.
Because things can break us down. Things happen. We get judged. We get misdiagnosed. We get unheard. All of those things can happen. And yet what I see is a group of women sitting here sharing ideas about how you can move through that. And some of the things that you are and have dealt with are incredible. Other people probably would have given up. But I want you to look around. There's no one in here, because you're here, that has given up. And that doesn't mean you might have wanted to. It doesn't mean you hadn't thought about it. But what happened is that piece I want you to begin to recognize is where you drew from to go at the punching bag, to make your list, to say, I need help, I can't do this, to go to one more doctor. That's where that comes from. And yes, the sun's gonna come out. It might be something I didn't wanna hear, a diagnosis of cancer. However, I'm bigger than the cancer. I'm bigger than my diagnosis right now. We're more than what's happening to us. And if you think about it that way, it allows you to go to that place that you need to have, that you have inside. Every one of you have that place. You're more than what's happening to you. more than the mean things that have happened in growing up and the things people say and all of that. So I just wanted to tag on because that was a really good analogy about fighting back. That's why this women's retreat and others, places where you go, are so valuable. They remind you, it reminds us who we are.
To spend 4 days being believed when so much of the rest of your life is spent being questioned is a special and even healing experience, one that is fundamental to the power of this retreat because it allows participants to be vulnerable without fear of judgment. So when women unite and are believed, what happens next? That's what we'll explore in our third and final episode next time. I'm Heather Robb. Thanks for listening.
Bloodstream Stories is proud to bring you this special series, produced and directed by Heather Robb, with support from the entire Bloodstream Media and Believe Limited teams. Empowering Women is written by Heather Robb, with support from Seth Kirshner, edited by Josh Davis, mixed by Josh Davis, with support from Michael Capuano at Iceman Sound and Scotty Ray, executive producers Patrick James Lynch and Ryan Geelan. To respect the privacy of the participants, we are not including the interviewees in the credits, but we'd like to extend a special, huge thank you to Melissa Reifke, Ed Kubler, and each of the women who courageously share their story for this series in hopes of helping others understand they are not alone. Visit www.bloodstreampod.com for more information on this series, on the Empowering Women Retreat, and our monthly flagship podcast, The Bloodstream Podcast. Bloodstream Podcast is a free monthly podcast that takes a 360-degree look at the bleeding disorders community, complete with community news, informed opinionating, and amazing in-depth interviews you won't hear anywhere else. You can find it and our other podcast series anywhere podcasts are distributed: iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, your favorite podcast app, and elsewhere. If you like this long-form series, may I suggest a couple others from our team? VWD Diagnosis, Treatment, and Life is a 90-minute, three-episode journey through all facets of living with VWD, featuring interviews with patients from all over the world, clinicians, and experts from NHF and HFA. You can hear this by subscribing to Bloodline, our long-form channel, anywhere podcasts are distributed, or visit www.bloodlinepod.com. Also, check out The Factor Revolution, The Last 60 Years in Hemophilia Treatment, a three-episode special series with over 40 interviews from community members, doctors, experts, and advocates. We take a deep look at the history of factor treatment from the 1950s to today. The Factor Revolution pulls together source material, news reports, white papers, and original audio content from the film Bad Blood and the HIV Story Project. You can hear this by searching the back catalog of Bloodstream Podcasts anywhere podcasts are distributed, or visit www.bloodlinepod.com. Happy listening.